KPCW News Time now, 8:11. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the first two homes of a project years in the making will come online next month. In the studio with details, I have the developer of Echo Spur, Sean Keller, and Dawn Chapman. She's with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Sean, these are the first two homes of how many?
A total of seven that will be done over the next couple of years.
Okay. So, given what you had to go through to get these built, I mean, like I say, it's been years in the making. Mm-hmm. Worth it?
Yeah, I think so. It's been quite an experience, but I think it's also a project that is kind of melding, you know, the latest in some of the building technology that happens to fit with the goals of what the city are from their general plan. So I think it's a win for everybody at this point.
Yeah. So are you selling the lots and then people are building the homes themselves, or are you doing that, the home building?
So we've put the first two up, and we've got plans and permits for the next couple. So we've got kind of an assortment of what people may want to look at. We've got the two ready to go in a month or so. We've got permits for the next two if they want to start building. And there's a few more lots, which is more on the to-be-determined side.
All right. So are the homes selling? You're handling that, Dawn?
We're just starting our marketing on the first two. And once finishes go in, the buyer can really see what they're looking at. And as far as luxury home construction goes in Park City, these are right at the very top, right down to the closets. They are so luxurious, and it's what people are looking for in that market.
Mm-hmm. So what's the price point on them?
We start at $2.7 million and go up to $3.5 million with our first four.
Wow, that's impressive. Let's talk a little bit about, I mean, you call them luxury and yet just recognized for their sustainability. So, Sean, talk a little bit about what you put into the homes to make them sustainable.
Well, it's really kind of a systematic approach to what the latest technology is between solar PV, super insulation, water cisterns. You know, there's all these different strategies out there that we think are actually attractive, both from just a kind of traditional green perspective, but also financially, because at this point, the cost of a lot of those tools have come down pretty dramatically. And when you really look at it now, from a homeowner perspective, you're actually saving a lot more on your monthly cost of running the home than if you didn't do some of these things.
Yeah, so the first two do have solar panels on them?
So there are the solar panels. We're using some super insulation strategies that our builder, Go West Development, has been using for many years in Park City. And then we've also got green roofs, because we do have flat roofs. So we are storing all the, you know, we're capturing all the snow and capturing all that rainwater and snow melt into a cistern, and then using the solar PV to pump that back onto the roof to irrigate the green roof. So that's all kind of integrated in kind of a systematic way. There's a local firm called Heliocentric, which are basically energy engineers, not the kind of people you normally hire for a home build, but they're the guys that really look at the whole system, the whole house in terms of the HVAC, you know, the solar PV, all these different items that go into making your house work and optimizing the performance of all of those different pieces.
Hmm. So how big are the homes?
They run from about a little over 2,700 feet to a little over 3,400 feet. They're three-bedroom and four-bedroom floor plans. The thing that buyers have really been impressed with when we've taken them through at this point in construction is the total integration from the ground up on how forward-thinking these homes are. The builder has implemented strategies that will benefit the home buyer for years to come, such as things like pre-plumbing for a radon system. Even though we don't have a radon issue currently, we live in the mountains, and that's something that can occur. So these homes are pre-plumbed. If a problem ever came up in the future, they simply add the blower system rather than spending thousands of dollars to try to get piping in the lower foundation, that type of thing. Then you go to the water cisterns. They are buried in below the patio. So they're there. You benefit from them, but you can't see them. You go into the AV system. You've got the solar panels on the roof, and then you've got an AV system that's tied into an app that actually senses the weather. So your home is thinking for you. If you want a 70-degree home, your home adjusts based on the weather front that's coming in. You don't have to go to the thermostat. These homes are so high-tech but low-touch that people walk in and they're just, you know, overwhelmed by the luxury, but then they see the technology that makes living there so comfortable and so easy.
So what makes them luxurious?
We're down to the finishes are Miele, and we have the little details that you look for, the under-counter lighting or the special granite or marble finishes, we have everything anybody else has, and then we go above that. Down to the closet space has Italian cabinetry in it. Just the extra touches, the tankless heated seat toilets. I mean, everything you could want that you've seen in some fancy hotel, we've got.
Yeah. So are they selling?
We haven't even got our first buyer yet. We're at construction phase. And so when you walk through and you're looking at 2x4s or 2x6s, it's kind of hard to give somebody a concept. Once we get in the next few weeks, we should have our first sales. We've got several buyers who've come through 3 and 4 times during construction, so we're real close on our first contract.
And we are going to be on the greenhouse tour on August 22nd as well, so that's kind of the first time that we'll be very, very close to being done and being in a position where people can kind of walk through and really kind of take a look at all the different features and the technology that's in the house.
Great. So last month, John, you were there at the Innovative City 2015 conference. It was held in Nice, France. The state of Utah's executive director for the Office of Energy Development gave a shout out to EchoSpur. So what did she say?
She said that EchoSpur was an example of innovative building in Utah that other builders should follow, that we were exactly what the governor's 26-point plan on energy development is striving for, sustainability.
Yeah, but certainly not everybody's got $1 million to $3 million to...
Exactly, and this is the type of thing that whenever you get a early adopter, you pay the higher prices. So this technology is going to be something that's going to be followed by other builders as it comes down in price. But right now, the luxury market is who's going to have to lead.
But in addition, too, there's a condo development down in Kimball Junction. There was actually an article in it in the Salt Lake Trib about it a day or two ago, talking about them using the exact same type of sustainable features that we're using. So this is not, you know, the pure sustainable strategies, the solar PV, these are not things just for the luxury market. This is what all builders should really be using, because, again, when you look at it from a financial perspective, I'm going to drop my utility bill and I'm going to replace it with a slightly higher mortgage, but the cost of paying that mortgage every month on an after-tax basis is less than what your utility bill would have been. So it just makes financial sense now. So the fact that we're building luxury homes in Old Town and the folks down in Kimball Junction are building $400,000 condos with the same strategies, I think, is quite telling.
All right. Okay, again, so people can have a look, you said, in August as part of the home tour?
August 22nd.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
I think we've covered pretty much everything.
All right. Sean and Don, thanks for coming in.
Thanks,
Leslie.
8:24 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour here on KPCW. Well, more than 100 people showed up last night at Tuesday's Park City School District Master Planning Public Outreach Meeting, the final in the series, to give their input. Some supported aspects of the master plan, others didn't, but overall the consensus was that the school district should just slow down. In the studio with me, I have the co-chairman of the Master Planning Committee, Sean Morgan, and Rory Murphy. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's first address that. I mean, those that think that the school district is moving too fast. You know, what somebody has said, well, given the missteps that we saw with the PC CAPS building even a year ago and with our IB program, that sometimes time helps just to figure things out. So what's the rush?
Well, thank you. You know, I just want to remind everybody that, you know, this process did begin over a year ago. You know, the idea behind the process was really to help identify current and future needs of the district. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that we are at capacity now. We have two schools that are, you know, have portables going up this year. So really, the process is a matter of pulling together what all of the current and future needs are and try to bring those together in a way that we get an overall plan to give us a roadmap for the future. And we need to address the current needs, you know, now. So yeah, I mean, in an ideal world, maybe this process would take 2 years instead of 1 year. But unfortunately, we don't have that right now.
Well, we're also just talking about perhaps a bubble of students, so that this could just be an anomaly and maybe trailers would get us through this growth needs. But have we done a needs assessment? Because that was another complaint. It's like people are calling this a master wish list as opposed to a master plan.
Well, and we spent quite a bit of time working on that, and there probably are a priority of items on there where some are certainly going to be more important than others, and others are more academically oriented, and others are more athletically oriented. And so, you know, right now, and that's what we're trying to do, is figure out what those priorities are and where they ought to fit in there. And so I think that you know, there may be some truth to the fact that, yeah, it probably is a something that we've sat around and people have said, hey, you know, what I would really like for my department and that kind of thing. But I think for the most part that that's not true. Like Sean said, you know, you have grade realignment that's going to happen. So a high school that must be expanded, you know, where it gets expanded, how it gets expanded, that's all questions up in the air. You have two elementaries at capacity. You know, we have trailers now, and so people are, like, upset over there in, where is it, the one that's Trailside. Yeah. They're upset now. They're like, we're going to sue the school district. And so, you know, you can't win. And so you got the back and forth where, you know, it's like, what, you know, we can't sit there on our hands, you know, for a long time and wait for the ideal solution. We have to work with the information we have and with do the best we can. And last night was really helpful. We heard a lot of terrific input from one end of the bell curve to the other.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about priorities, and you have done this now for more than a year, I mean, are you ready? Do you know what the priorities are? I mean, based on what you've heard in these last three meetings?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. You know, I don't think anybody would disagree that the priorities really are to, you know, we have capacity needs now. We need to need to identify and we need to resolve those current needs now. But we need to do it in a way that doesn't box ourselves in for the future. That's what the master plan is all about. It's really to give us a roadmap to get ourselves through not only today, in 5 years, and then in 10 years. So we're doing this in a thoughtful way that again addresses the current needs as well as the future needs. It's not to say that the plan before the community right now is going to get all implemented at one time. Likely, it's not going to. That's just too much. But we want to know that what we're doing now is going to fit in with the plan that we want to implement over the course of the next 5-10 years.
Mm-hmm. I think still people are kind of late to the party, though. And given now that we're having these meetings during summer when a lot of people are on vacation, people are also saying that's not fair. So while you and the Master Planning Committee have been meeting for a year and have gone through all of this discussion, public hasn't. And now they're asking, you know, let's back off so that, you know, those people that want to participate can participate. And while we're saying that, you know, we need trailers, well, we're doing trailers anyway, so maybe we have 2 years of trailers or 3 years of trailers. But at the same time that, you know, well, we're doing this for education reasons, you know, that we have to go to full-day kindergarten. Well, we've never had full-day kindergarten. What's waiting another year? Right? I mean, it just seems a little bit disingenuous that we're trying to tie educational standards to building new buildings.
How is I'm not sure I understand the question, but
well, because we're doing this because we're going to full day kindergarten.
Okay. Well, no, that's like one portion of the reason. I think we're doing it because we have right now at two elementaries we're over capacity, and this grade realignment is moving forward, so we certainly have got to address that. And then, you know, what's going to happen? We have Treasure Mountain we have two reports showing Treasure Mountain at subpar performance. We had teacher after teacher get up last night and say, yeah, this building is hurting and you need to tear it down as soon as possible. And people would erupt in cheers. And so, you know, it's not, I'm not sure where that's coming from, where it's, oh, this is all being driven by, because I've heard that, and it's kind of funny, because that's been like 5% of the conversation, and there's really like so many driving factors affecting this.
All right, and you're saying growth is one of them, and there's no crystal ball. So again, we don't know if this is just a little blip on the, you know, on the chart, or do we really have needs for you know, I mean, with the trend being that homes are being sold to second homeowners as opposed to primary homeowners, do we really have the need for?
Well, we know that the high school, we have to add a grade. You know, we know that. And so, you know, it's not big enough now. And so even if things stayed static, we would have to increase the volume of the high school. And then, not to mention, what are we going to do with Treasure? I mean, if Treasure gets raised for, you know, if in fact, because we did order a third study, because that was a concern brought up by the public, like, all right, we want to know if we're spending millions of dollars. And so we said, fine, that's a good comment, good question, good place to spend some money is let's do a third study. And if it comes back that indeed this thing's going to cost $17-18 million to make right, and even then people are upset about the hallways and everything else, then you really got to start looking at a new school. And so, you know, like I said, some of this is happening whether we grow or not. But the growth really is, I think, the driver far more than this all-day kindergarten.
So what about the comment that we why if we're talking about trying to make more room, why not keep a 5-8 school here in the city limits and do a 5-8 out at Ecker? And that's something that really hasn't been explored much.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I think that some people in the community would agree that that is a good way to go, that we have two campuses. I believe the district had that in the past. And what we heard when Rory and I came on board, you know, last year, was that the result of that wasn't – you ended up getting a bit of a segregation of students. That's kind of number one. But number two, and really probably more importantly, is that the district likely isn't big enough students to warrant the cost for two separate 5-8 schools. I mean, you know, if we were a much larger community that had the tax base to support that, that would be one thing. But when we're talking about the numbers just to do some of the basic things that we're talking about in what might be phase one of this master plan, and we're already hearing that that's a high price tag, we're talking about a whole lot more if we have to build yet another school to have two 5-8s.
Well, build and operate. I mean, yeah. It's just – and it really is. It's a cost thing, and it's like – I mean, and this has come up in recent months, and, you know, and I think it would be great that it was all neighborhood schools and everyone could walk to school, but, you know, it's just cost. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole thing right now is we're talking about public funds and we have to be proper stewards and, you know, we can't fulfill everybody's desire.
Yeah. Let's also concerns over saying that we need to do this bond now because of concern over escalating cost. Even if we were to bond, I mean, the interest rate is only on when the bond is sold. So you can carry this bond forward for many, many years. So interest rates really don't play into this, do they? I mean,
they would for this cycle. Like whatever we did in the immediate 1 or 2 year future, certainly the interest rates will play into it. But you're right. If we, you know, you don't kick, you know, lock in an interest rate until you actually go for a bond. And, you know, say, you know, just to kind of pull a scenario out of my hat, if we decided to do the 5th and 6th 3 years from now, it would be the bonding rate 3 years from now. It wouldn't be the bonding rate today. So, but the one thing that does also come into that, and, you know, and these are pressures, and they're ones that we have to mention. I'm not going to say that they are overriding and will decide that we'll determine how this thing goes. But it's cost of construction. In the past 3 years, cost of construction in Utah, and you can verify this, has gone up 5% a year. And so, you know, if we do it this year, it costs X million. If we do it next year, it costs that plus 5% and so on. So you just, you know, there's all these things that are coming into play.
One other thing when we talk about cost is that this year is a municipal year election. So that means that the school district would actually have to pay to hold a special election to have the bond put on the ballot. Again, and I think another reason that people are saying it's a good idea to wait a year. Let's do it during a presidential election when everybody, well, I shouldn't say everybody, but when a lot more people get out to vote as opposed to just during the city races.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that we've heard is that some of the other potential bond initiatives were kind of waiting for the school district to go through with their bond, and they've sort of left a spot for us this year. On that's at least what I've heard. And so, you know, by waiting next year, we may be up against a lot more competition for other bond initiatives as well. So, and that's just, again, that's just another piece to the puzzle that we're trying to sort through.
Well, I do want to emphasize, Leslie, that, you know, we're going to eventually make a recommendation to the school board. You know, we are an advisory board. We have no teeth beyond that. And the school board will either ratify our suggestion, they'll amend it, or they'll turn it down. And it's the elected officials, it's in their hands at the end of the day, whether or not this moves forward.
So first phase is the expansion on the high school and a 5th-6th school. Is that, and the raising of Treasure Mountain?
Correct.
Well, yeah, Treasure Mountain will have to wait until the 5th and 6th is up and running, because we're going to have to house those students somewhere.
But we're going to make sure we have the money to do that.
Right.
All right. Then the second phase is when the field house would come into play. So let's talk really briefly about that, because, of course, with the news this week that the Snyderville Basin Recreation District purchased property and they've got money in the bank to do an indoor field house, where do things stand with that? I mean, if they're going to do it, why not partner with them and yeah. then keep that whole side of east side of the Kearns campus
right.
open?
No, that's a very good question. And you know, obviously this is breaking news, right? We just heard about this earlier this week. So certainly that comes into play. And, you know, we have been in discussions with Snyderville Basin Rec District on a potential field house. Mm-hmm. And, you know, during our planning process, they did identify that it was a need of theirs, a top priority of theirs, as well as, you know, what we've been hearing from other folks and from our own, you know, school district, you know, faculty. So now we need to go back to the, you know, to the group and discuss it more. I don't think that there's a diminished need. It's a matter of where does it happen and when does it happen? Does it happen on our campus? Is it part of our plan or not? So
no, that's right. And, you know, the basic push-pull is, you know, is there a need for it? Absolutely. We heard that last night. It was like a tennis game going back mm-hmm. and forth with, you know, we must have this. You can't have this. We must have this, you know. And so, it, you know, everyone would cheer every time. But it's you know, it's cost. It's, you know, the things are. It's not an inexpensive deal. I don't think, you know. Someone brought up, you know, if you're going to do it, certainly partner with the district and the city and anyone else that's interested. And that's good advice. But right now, again, you know, a big part of the discussion last night was, okay, what do you need and what do you want? And we got to focus on what we need. We really do. And so, you know, whether or not a field house hits the top of that priority list, I can't tell you right now.
Let's talk briefly about the high school, because I think this was raised as brought up last night as well. You know, there's concern about going into the parking lots, taking away parking that's needed. Someone, I think, mentioned, well, let's just go up higher. And I think it was you that said that, well, there's city regulations about going, you know, height limitations, but doesn't matter. We're a school district. You can do whatever you want, right?
Well, not really. You know, it's, you know, regulatory-wise, probably we could go 8 stories. But the fact is the school district has chosen to voluntarily honor, you know, post the Eccles Center, you know, great community civil war of whatever that was. You know, the school district has made a conscious decision to build within the city height ordinance. So we can go up in certain places, we can't in others.
Yeah, there's also, if I might add to that, there's also other implications to going up. The foundations would need to be rebuilt, basically. And so that means taking that entire wing or wings offline, which is a tremendous impact to the high school for the duration of construction. So, you know, there's costs associated with that as well. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into play with all of this. We're trying to sift through them all and determine which is the right direction to go. There's no right and wrong answer to any of this. It's all a matter of really being thoughtful and hearing all of the comments, thinking through what is the most logical resolution to what the current needs are now for the community and the district.
So the Master Planning Committee is scheduled to make a recommendation to the school board when?
Well, I think that all blue skies, no cloudy days, will make one in mid-August. But it's, you know, and that's if we feel like all the information's there. Yeah. You know, Bill Mammon brought up a good point last night. He says, you know, usually you get down to the penny with how much you want, and then you go forward. Mm-hmm. You know, we're not going to have that luxury. We don't have architectural drawings, and we're not going to be able to say, yeah, it's $23 million, $539,000. It's because we just simply aren't to that level of information. We can ballpark it, and we can get close. And again, what's driving this more than anything is not trying to do all-day kindergarten or even the grade realignment. It's that, you know, we are at capacity at several of our schools.
So do we have a ballpark figure at this point?
We have broken down the individual projects one by one, but we have overall figures. If everything was built that everyone wished for, which already much of that has come off the table, and it's an extraordinary amount of money. But what really I think it has to come down to is a project by project basis. But the high school alone is probably going to be somewhere between 17 and 23 million. You know, we had a pretty good construction charrette with some very talented guys there trying to give us, you know, really a ballpark number with almost no information. And I think it was a good exercise, but it's, you know, that's the fact is the detail's not there right now.
So any more opportunity for the public to make comment on this, or is that just at the August 18th board meeting?
Well, we always encourage people, if there are comments, they want to provide more input, to go to the Park City School District website. There's a master planning button on that, and that'll bring you to the master planning page. And on that, there's a link to email to the master planning group, and I don't have that email with me right now, but it's on the website. We read every single email that comes in. We discuss them at the steering committee meetings, and we try to respond to them as well. But really, the what we're trying to do is collect all of this community input, then sit down and determine what the course of action is. We really didn't want to try to change course in the middle of the process. We wanted to hear all of it as we went through. And that's why we didn't present any kind of different plan last night than we had presented before. We wanted to get all the input, then sift through it, get to a well thought out recommendation to the board.
Okay. So do you have a number for me in terms of how much?
Well, I mean, no, because we don't, you know, like Sean said, we're already in the process now of going, okay, we need X, we don't need Y, you know, and we're discussing that as a committee. But as he said, we wanted to show the whole thing. So the figures that we have now, it's going to depend on what we recommend to the board.
Okay. I need to leave it at that. Got through about a third of the questions, but thanks for your time this morning.
Great. Thanks, you, Leslie.
It's 8:46 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. The Park City Planning Commission meets tonight in work session starting at 5:30. In the studio, I have staff planner Christy Alexander. Good morning, Christy.
Good morning, Leslie.
So first off, the building department asking the Planning Commission to discuss the current process for addressing construction mitigation. Is there anything specific here, or they just want to review the process? Or
yeah, we have a lot of new commissioners that came on in the past year, and they don't necessarily understand the entire process in the building department. So we want to bring those officials from the building department in and explain that mitigation process that they go through at the building permit approval.
So we're not talking about making changes
just more to understand the process.
All right, because, you know, I know that some of the complaints have been, you know, the cranes on Main Street stopping up traffic and creating, mm-hmm. having congestion. And so, I mean, we're not relooking at specific mitigation
perhaps
techniques.
The building department is within their own department, but that won't be discussed tonight.
Okay. Let's see. The all of the land management code amendments are being continued just because you're not ready to move on with those? Or
correct. And we're still receiving public input and working through those changes to bring them back.
All right. The big ticket item, of course, is the Alice Claim development, the Planning Commission allowing the developer to, to have this second meeting, basically. Is the staff making a recommendation on it?
So basically, what we have recommended is that they hold the public hearing this evening to get more public input, and then we had asked them at the last Planning Commission meeting on the 8th to submit all their Planning Commissioners' comments, because they, at the June 10th meeting, they had said that they were withholding some of their comments until they saw the applicant's response, and the applicant has responded. They submitted that earlier last week. And so now that the commission has all this information, we've asked them that they submit all their comments, and then they direct staff to prepare findings for either approval or denial to be voted on at the next meeting in August.
Okay. So any chance that it would be continued one more time?
So hopefully they're directing us this evening to prepare mm-hmm. the findings for denial or approval okay. and continue it to August. So it probably will be continued until August unless the commission decides to take that vote and have me prepare those findings this evening.
All right. So some of the planning commissioners, my understanding, are out of town. I mean, do they want to wait so that they can make that recommendation? I mean, that's where it sounds like it's because it's this commission that's going to tell you what kind of findings to prepare, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So. We will have a quorum. We will have four people there for this item. And so hopefully we've received the previous comments from commissioners. We've asked them to submit any comments if they have any. And it's up to the commission this evening. Hopefully that's why we're asking them to continue as well, so that if the commissioners that come back at the next meeting have any additional comments, they could supply those then.
All right. Any results? I know that the property owner was negotiating with another property owner for some access. Any results on that?
The applicant has only stated that they're continuing their negotiations, but they have not come to an agreement at this time.
Okay. Anything else people should know?
Just come out and provide your public input, and hopefully it will go well this evening.
All right. Christy, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
That's Park City Planning staff member Christy Alexander. It's 8:51 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour on KPCW. Well, a number of Utah riders competed in the National Mountain Bike Championships. In the studio with me, I have two champions. I have Hallie Batten and Tom Noker. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Les.
Good morning.
So you both won in cross country?
Yes, correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So Hallie, tell me, let me get you a little closer to that microphone. So you competed in what?
I competed in the Cat 1 17-18 women race. And yeah, it's a...
And that went up to how, the ages involved in that?
Yeah, so 17-18 mm-hmm. age category, and there are about 15 girls that competed.
Okay, and mm-hmm. You're 17, so you were on the younger end of that.
Yes, correct. Yeah, I'm 16, race age 17. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, great. Congratulations.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And then, Tom, you were competing in what age group?
In the Social Security division, the 65 to 69 group.
And how many competitors did you have in your group?
It didn't count. A dozen, 15 or so.
All right. So I think you won by, what, a minute and a half?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I had a pretty good grip. I had a good race and just kind of held the lead throughout the race. And yeah.
Yeah. And you as well. You were...
I got a gap pretty early and then stretched it out and then kind of relaxed and enjoyed the day. I'm sure mm-hmm. Haley kind of did the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a fun course to ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were actually up against a guy named Dwight Himmen of Salt Lake City. He was your closest competitor?
He may live in Salt Lake. I think he was in Park City for a while. Yeah, he was right there in second place.
Yeah, so he's won national championships before, have you?
This was my third.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And I think this is your second, right?
No. This is my fifth.
Oh,
yeah.
God. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so talk a little bit about just, we've got really both ends of the mm-hmm. spectrum here. Mm-hmm. In terms of your training, I mean, you just get out and put the miles on? Or
yeah, I do a lot of all sorts of training, easy rides, long rides, intervals, everything that can get me ready for any terrain or just so that I'm strong for any race that comes. So.
And Tom, I know you always ride. Is that so you've got really kind of the same program?
Well, similar, I would suppose. I mean, I haven't raced a bunch in the last few years. Since I started coaching, I've spent a lot more time with that than actual competing myself, but I still do. And this year, I primarily trained for this race. I didn't do a lot of races in front of it. So basically relied on my training and tried to put that to work for me.
Yeah. So how did the course, the race course that you competed in, I mean, how does it compare to what you ride here in Utah?
Yeah, it was really unique. The dirt was really thick and loose, which is a little bit different than the terrain that we have here. And then the climbs were really steep, and then the descents were really rocky and loose as well. So it fit well for my abilities. So I can climb well, and then the descents were good too. But it was different than the Park City riding for sure.
So you're able just to climb it all, huh? And you, Tom, I mean, did you find it challenging?
Yeah, same course. I don't know. Did you do the amateur course, Haley, or did you do the pro course?
I think yours was a little bit longer.
Yeah. The pro course was a little shorter, and they did more laps, and we shared the same descent and part of the same climb. The amateur course was an extension upon that pro course, so we climbed a little higher and did fewer laps. But we raced on the same descent. And, you know, I characterized it as sort of a kitty litter surface, pretty skiddy. You had to be careful of that. There were a lot of berms and swoopy radius turns. Unlike here, a lot of the switchbacks here tend to be a little bit tighter. There were a lot of really smooth, radiused, fast turns. And then there were a few nice rocky sections to break that up that were fun. As the weekend kind of gets closer and more people ride the course, it gets chewed up a lot. And that happens at every national championship or World Cup race. You would really find different lines developing throughout the week. In fact, on race day, I took a couple lines that I didn't even look at. You know, I just saw them and went, wow, that looks like a better shot. Yeah. So let's jump in there. Yeah. And it works out really well.
Yeah. So you really just do it for fun, and I guess is really to make a name for yourself, probably spend more time coaching now? I mean, as opposed to having some, you know, aspirations of national championships?
Well, I certainly had an aspiration to go here and win. And but, I mean, I'm not trying to sell myself as a coach. I have a very small coaching roster, and I like to keep it that way. And it's all junior riders. Like, I worked with Haley for just one season before she moved to whole athlete. You know, and Keegan and Swenson, and I work with John Drain right now, and I have a young man who races motocross, Luke Santos, who's now starting to bridge into cross-country mountain bike racing, and so I work with him as well. But no, I don't go to these events looking for customers. I just show up and do the best I can in my race, and I keep my coaching roster really tight, really small.
Yeah, and so for you, Haley, though, you probably have got aspirations, though. I mean, what are your goals?
Yeah, for sure. So this race was really big because I was finally in an age category to qualify for world championships. So being able to win the race automatically qualified me for that race. So that's going to be really exciting. And then hopefully next season I can go to some races in Europe as well and just keep traveling and having fun.
Yeah, so where are world championships?
They're in Andorra.
So since you've qualified, you can go to world champions too?
No, they don't have world championships there for masters racers. But I should say that I think Haley right now is ranked number one in the world, right?
Yes, I am. Yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
So not just a national champion, but she's the number one in her division in the world, which is a big thing.
So we've got, of course, the Olympics next year. Does that give you a berth there?
No, I will still be a little too young to actually race in the pro categories and try to go for the Olympics. But I think Keegan Swenson could try for that for sure.
Yeah. So Keegan, he came back. He had second place finish, I think, in these.
Yeah, strong second against the elites. First time he's raced the elites, certainly at nationals. He races against the same guys in other races. In the World Cup, he races U23. Mm-hmm. There's a points qualification for Olympics, and the U.S. team's trying to get the points to maybe add a third selection position for Olympics. So one of the reasons he and Howard Grotz both jumped out of U23 into the elites. Of course, Howard won this race, so we had two U23s, first and second, on the podium. You can see a bit of a paradigm switch there right now. There's some young athletes coming up in the sport that are really starting to dominate. Here's one right next to me. So it's a great, you know, it's a great opportunity for Keegan and for Haley to come up.
Yeah. So did you get your start in like young riders?
Yeah, I did, for sure. Young Riders, Summit Bike Club, high school team. Yeah, it all. Yeah, it's awesome. We're lucky to have that in Park City, and I think it helps a lot of the athletes go into all the national races and do well.
Yeah, so just in the last minute we've got here. So mm-hmm. a number of Park City racers as mm-hmm. well. Can you tell me about any of the others?
Yeah, Connor Penn and John went third and ninth in the 15-16 Cat 1 race. And then we had Skylar Patton and Katie Klaus take first and second in the 13-14, which is pretty awesome for Utah.
Well, good. Congratulations to both of you, and good coaching there, Tom. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Leslie.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Tom Noker and Haley Batten. KPCW News Time now, 8:59.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.